Hey everyone, before we get started on the episode, I wanted to answer one of the questions I've been getting lately. That is, how did you start your podcast? I've been more than honest that I'm not an audio expert and have been proud to share that my podcast is done by me and completely without investing in expensive software or equipment. That's been really important to me because my goal is to have great conversations with interesting working moms and not spending a ton of money. The key to all of that has been using this great, awesome, and free platform, Anchor, to build, edit, and distribute my podcast. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means you can get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading this ad. So go to anchor.fm/start to get started now. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. Now for the show. Listening to After Daycare Drop Off, the podcast for working moms like you and like me. Today we're talking with Haley. She's married, has a one-year-old daughter, and is working in human resources. Let's check in with her.
Hi, Haley.
Hello. Can you hear me now?
Of course I can.
Awesome. Okay.
Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic.
Good.
What's your drink of choice today?
I have a Sam Adams Cherry Wheat.
Ooh, that sounds good.
I got it. Oh, it was around Christmas, but I got too many. So now I have to drink them.
That's like the worst, where you get excited for Oktoberfest beers and you buy all of them.
Yes.
And then immediately it's time for Christmas and you're like, I'm tired of that kind.
Yeah. But it's nice because then I can just go back to it when I'm in the mood. And right now I have a whole bunch of random Sam Adams and Blue Moons that I can go back to. So that's good.
See, I have this one in the fridge. It's this cherry hibiscus one.
Mm.
It's good, but it's like kind of weird. So it's one of those mood too.
I don't think I could do that one.
Yeah. I'm doing just tea today because this weather, man, is like sinus nonsense.
I feel so
like I need my tea. It's like sleep tea, and it just makes me think of that chamomile tea commercial with like J.J. Watt.
I don't know that one.
It's hilarious. So, aside from having an abundance of Sam Adams, I know something exciting has happened in your life recently, and that is your daughter turned one.
Yes, she did.
Tell me about kind of how crazy that was to kind of be like, oh, shit, what happened?
Yeah, that happened quick. I always go back to that quote of the days are long, but the years are short.
Oh my God.
Which is what I told myself every time I was up in the middle of the night feeding her when she was young, because I knew someday I would look back on it. But at the time I was like, oh my God, this is hell. Yeah. I can't go without sleep. So yeah, looking back, I'm like, well, that was the longest and shortest year of my life at the same time. I don't know any other way to describe it. So I think during her birthday, she was getting over RSV, but she was still in good spirits and loved her cake and all her little guests. So it went really well, and I still can't believe that she is over 1 year old now. It went way too quick.
And see, that
quote, and yours will be one, like, what, next month?
Yeah, at the end of this month, on the 30th.
Oh, boy.
I know. And it's like these milestones cause you to be like, oh my gosh, what happened? And you're with that quote. Like, I've heard that before, and I wish I would have thought about it more when I was like, oh my gosh, because
I can tell you exact moments I remember down to the detail of rocking her or trying to get her to go to sleep and thinking, oh my Lord, I don't think I can have another kid after this. She's going to be an only child. I can't do this again. And then that quote would pop in my head. I'd be like, okay, I need to just remember to enjoy these moments. And right now I have a friend in the same boat. Her daughter's a week old, and she is just beside herself with no sleep. Last night she finally slept 3 hours in a row, and it was like the greatest thing that ever happened to Logan.
And it's like, the further you get away from it, like, you remember, but it's less, like, that pain is less.
Yep. I'm like, oh, you're fine. You'll get through it. You're at the hardest part. She messaged me on day 4, I think. And I was like, oh, the cluster feeding. I'm like, yeah, this is the hardest part. You don't have a choice but to just, like, go with it. And I promise it gets better.
I know.
Poor girl.
Well, and, like, everyone's so sweet and they want to visit. And you're like, I feel like I'm going to die.
That's what I said. I said, don't let people come down. And if they do, put them to work. Like, don't be afraid. And she's like, I just can't get any sleep. And then when I do, I have to get up and do things. I'm like, no, you don't. Your one goal right now is to feed that baby and sleep. That's it. That's your only goal for the first month. Well, your husband can do everything else.
Yeah. Well, I think it was Andy that said this. Well, I mean, I know it was, but we were talking similarly about, like, adding another child and just how you, like, you get tricked because it gets far enough away.
Yep.
Where these, like, the bad part, I mean, it's not bad, but just the hard part.
Mm-hmm. You forget.
Yeah. So.
Uh-huh.
It's just, like, they trick you. Like, that's true. Because now, I'm sure you're at the same point, too. I mean, honestly, people ask you, like, you're wheeling out of the hospital, like, oh, we're gonna have another one. You're like, dude, let me, like, figure this out first.
Let me heal this C-section scar first.
Yeah.
And then I will get back to you.
Let me be able to stand up all the way straight.
That would be nice.
Well, I even stopped by my neighbor's house today just to chat for a few minutes. And I brought Anna with me. And they're like, oh, so you're gonna have another one? I'm like,
yes.
I'm like, I haven't talked to you for months. So why are you asking me?
It is crazy that you have one and then they say, when are you going to have another? And you have a second one. And then they immediately say, you're done though, right? Like, you can't win.
No.
Ever.
Mm-mm. No.
Whatever.
I know. Just my.
I'll figure it out in time.
Yeah. What'll happen will happen and we'll freak out.
Exactly. Thing, right? Exactly. I'm just happy to have one.
Right? Well, and I'm sure you feel the same way because it's like, well, she's so awesome. Like,
yeah, that's scared. Yes, that is exactly, like, will I even love another kid this much? Like, I truly wonder that all the time.
I know, isn't that terrible?
No, well, and that's the thing, is I know it's possible, other moms do it, but, like, how? I don't understand that yet. I don't know, but I think about that all the time.
Yeah, is that, like, is that why the oldest kid is sometimes the favorite? I don't know.
But then I am the oldest kid and I've never felt like I was the favorite. My mom always, like, treated Hayden like he was the favorite, but I think it's just also because he's the baby and that was her last kid.
Yeah. That's how my,
so I make the joke that, like, she still, like, fluffs his baked potato during dinner.
Well, she's
like, you never treated me like this. Gosh, mom.
This sounds very familiar.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
It's like, well, because, you know, you have to wait to do all the stuff and then your sibling gets to do everything when you get to do it. It's like, he's 3 years younger than me. What's the deal?
Hayden got a cell phone before me and he's 7 years younger.
Oh my God. That's crazy.
He was, I was 16. So I was driving and he was 9 and he opened, there's a tape of it. He opened a cell phone on Christmas morning and I'm thinking, oh my God, where's mine? Like, I can't wait. And it was a flip phone, of course.
Right.
And then I realized I was at a president's and I'm on camera and I look at my dad like, are you freaking kidding me? And my dad dead serious says to me, well, Haley, he rides his bike all over town. I said, Dad, I have a car. I'm driving all over for football games. He's like, well, I didn't think of that. I'm like, are you guys kidding me right now? Like, how does this happen?
You're like, I've converted this VHS to DVD for the memories.
Yeah. But okay, Hayden gets on his Huffy and all of a sudden he gets a cell phone.
Right.
All right. God, I'm still mad about it if you can't tell.
No, it's fair. And so it makes you think too. It's like, you know, these things like fester. It's like, all right, here's all the things I want to make sure I don't do to my kids.
Absolutely. Yep.
Like when I was pregnant with Anna, I've got to find this list, but I started this list of like all the things my children will know how to do, because whether it be with work and someone's like, I don't know what, you know, I don't know how to open up an IRA. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Or because you had to do it yourself.
Yeah. Or like, I don't know how to change a tire. I'm like, putting it down in the list for my future children. You're going to learn all these things before you leave for college. Like,
I knew a family that before they would let their kid take their, or all their kids actually take their driving test, they had to learn to change the oil on their own, change a tire, and something else. And I remember thinking that was really extreme. And now looking back, I'm like, that is so smart.
I know. We have to remember these things when we get so busy.
And but by then, like, will they have tires on automatic cars, flying cars? Like, I don't know.
Well, for your sake, I hope so.
Well, yeah, that's true. I read an article the other day about self-driving cars and how they're like coming. They're coming. They're being made, and how they will drive more miles because of it. So more tires will be needed.
Ooh,
which I thought was good news.
That is good news for you. Well, so you know, as far as you want to get into it, tell me about your job in human resources. Okay.
Yes, I work in HR. At a tire company, and I am a corporate recruiter for sales, marketing, and supply chain. I've also done some engineering positions there, IT, finance, pretty much any position we've had. And I basically started up the recruiting department because previous to me, we used an outsourced recruiting department. So I was recruited by a recruiter to start recruiting, which is a mouthful.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know at the time that I took the position that's what was going to happen, but I had been on the job, I think, 2 months, and my boss quit to be a stay-at-home mom.
Okay.
So I was just left to kind of do my own thing. I did eventually get another boss who was super awesome, and she knew. She's like, you know, I don't know much about recruiting. I'm going to kind of let you do what you think is best. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how we worked for the next 2 years before she moved on to another position. And that was just a really great experience because I had to really learn how to what we needed, when we needed it. I was just put in that position and had to learn on the fly, basically.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
So
here we are 5 years later.
Yeah.
I think we're finally I wouldn't say a well-oiled machine, but we're at the point where things are working how they should, and we're able to do fun things like maybe work on adding like an employee referral program where if you have enough referral and they get hired, you get like $1,000.
Ooh, nice.
And you know, other things like talent pipelines. We have a whole university relations group. So really fun things like that, which to me are fun.
Well, yeah. So when you think about how you kind of started with nothing, that's kind of surprising, given, I mean, I guess if they were outsourcing, but given the size of the company you work for, there wasn't a well-oiled machine already. Mm-mm. How did you even tackle that?
So the biggest part was just educating the people on what I did. A lot of people thought I was like a headhunter for even other positions, which no, I was, you know, just for Cooper. And a lot of my position is, I kind of look at it as think like a marketer, act like a recruiter. You have to market the job, the company, brand awareness is big. And so a lot of it was educating hiring managers and just like letting them know and what I was there to do and working with them. I kind of put as much responsibility on them to fill their positions as I do myself. Because I do think it's a partnership for sure.
Yeah.
So I really had to start with just educating them on what I'm going to do, what I expect them to do. And then just having a few successes really, really helped. I mean, everybody was pretty much a skeptic because they had a really bad experience with the people we outsourced.
Yeah.
And so I kind of started off, I wouldn't say on a bad foot, but they didn't have a good experience. So I guess I started off at the bottom and I couldn't go any further down, which was almost good. So here we are 5 years later, and we've gone through a few employee changes, but I now have a coworker who is like the Cooper cheerleader of all time. So it's been pretty great.
Well, I hope you've seen, but I've been watching your guys' stuff on LinkedIn.
Oh, okay. Seeing,
like, the student level stuff you've been doing as far as mm-hmm. teaching them early and even younger than, like, ready to work.
So that is, like, what we call, like, the dream team. Mm-hmm. I don't like that name, but if you think about it, I love my job. I know a lot of people at Cooper love their job. But no kid, or we target eighth graders, they don't know that there's jobs in manufacturing. Mm-hmm. They don't think of that. They think when they drive by Cooper, we all walk in and have a time card stamped and we work on like the line. Mm-hmm. So when we go tell them like what we do and hey, like we have degrees or these people have associate's degrees, they are just so confused because when you grow up, you hear like, do you want to be a doctor or a scientist? Or, you know, any of those fields, an engineer. You never hear about things like a business intelligence analyst or a recruiter. I never heard of that job until after college. So we're just kind of educating them on the past they have. And not all of them are degreed. And I think that's super important right now is as you're raising your kids, if they're not into college, there's so many other avenues they can take and still have an awesome job.
That's so true because I don't know if you remember this, but my husband works in manufacturing and he, you know, we all went to school together. So he does have a degree and they are always trying to find talented machinists and makers, which are not
skilled trades.
Yeah. Skilled trades. And
can't find them.
They're so competitive and so in demand that the people that are doing those jobs are in somewhat of a good spot because they can really pick where they want to be. But
they make more at Cooper than I make. They make more coming into Cooper on their first day than I probably make in a year right now. and if they had a bad day, they could literally leave, go somewhere else, get the same job within the next week. Mm-hmm. That's how in demand they are.
Yeah. Well, and it's an aging population. And like you said, it's either, you know, kids don't know that it's an option or even like the vocational stuff is kind of fading away in a lot of communities.
Yeah, they're taking it out of school. So the kids don't know. Yeah. And it's terrible because they think like, well, I'm not college material. What can I do? I'm no good. And it's like, no, like you have so much skill that I wouldn't have. You know?
Well, and seriously, how's a kid supposed to be sitting there and just like dream up a concept of being a machinist? Like you have to show them, them that it's
I would love to work on making molds. That's just what I'm sitting here dreaming about.
Like they're not gonna dream it up out of nowhere.
I know.
And
so that's like we do a lot of that at Cooper, so that's one of my favorite things about the job is just educating people on what we have to offer, because we literally have, I bet under our one roof, a job for any person besides like the medical field.
That's pretty impressive, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so how many people are you recruiting? Like, how many positions are you helping hiring managers with, like, a year?
At any given time, we have about 50.
Mm-hmm.
So through the year, I don't know, 100 to 150 for me. And then my coworker, probably about the same.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's a lot.
So when you're recruiting, you know, obviously you said you're working with the hiring manager to kind of discuss what it is they want, what they're looking for, set expectations. But when it comes time to interview, do you do the pre-screening or do you hand them off at a certain point? And how does that work?
So I do all the phone interviews for my positions. And unless the hiring manager wants to do them, if they're like a really technical position, then they're able to find out within 5 minutes if they're good or not, whereas it would take me a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
So I do a majority of the phone interviews for my areas.
Okay. What's the most interesting one you've had so far?
Oh my gosh.
That you can tell.
The pregnant lady comes to mind. She was awesome. And it was for a brand new marketing position that we have that we're going to be opening. And she had mentioned she was pregnant, and so she was going to be on maternity leave soon. But she could still come in and interview if we needed her to. And so obviously I got to talking to her about being pregnant. And I said, you know, so when did you do? And she said, oh, about any day now. I said, oh, okay. She goes, my water broke actually this morning.
Any day, like today.
Yeah. And I went, what? And she goes, yeah, my husband's on his way home. It's fine. I go, oh my gosh. And I said, are you having a boy or girl? She said, oh, it's twins. I thought, oh my Lord. And she nailed this phone interview sitting there after her water broke, waiting for her husband to come get her and take her to the hospital. She still kept it and everything. I could not believe it.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Women are amazing.
It's like, I want to like shake her hand.
Me too. I have to meet her in person, but I sat there the whole time like, is this real life?
Like, am I being bunked?
Yeah, she was awesome. So good for her. And everything went well. I talked to her a couple weeks later and it wasn't there first. So she kind of knew what she was getting into anyways, but it's twins. So
yeah, who like knows? You know a little bit, but it's going to,
yeah.
I guess when you assume if you're going to have twins, well, maybe it's not a given, but like probably going to be a C-section. So she's like, I kind of know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I think you're right. She didn't seem at all concerned because when she told me her water broke, I was like, you need to go right now. She's like, my husband's on his way home. We'll be fine.
Like, you go eat a snack.
Okay.
Because you're not going to get one.
Yeah. Get some Jell-O, girl.
No, my water broke at home, like, when dinner was about to be ready. And I took those enchiladas on the road with me. I ate them.
Oh, good.
I did.
I didn't do that right because I started getting contractions at night, like 3 a.m. or something. And I didn't quite know they were contractions until they throughout the day got stronger and more consistent. Mm-hmm. So for whatever reason, I decided that day to keep it light just in case. So I think I had like 2 Jell-O packs that day and then went to the hospital that night and obviously didn't eat anything for another like 24 hours.
See, I was told that like chances are you're probably going to go to the bathroom
on the
table. So just eat because it doesn't matter.
I didn't even get to that point, so I really regret that decision of 2 Jell-O packets.
See, the thing I did wrong was I didn't bring Tony any enchiladas. I just brought my own.
I should have brought something because that was a 45-minute drive to our hospital, so I could have ate the whole way.
You could have ate, like, digested.
I know. Next time. I'll do it different next time.
Right. So after you do the phone interviews, you hand them off. Do you get to do like the offer or anything like that? Or do you work with
them? So sometimes I sit in on the on-site interviews as the HR person, just to make sure everything they're saying is consistent with what they've told me.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big red flag. If you've told me something in the phone interview and on the on-site, all of a sudden it's different. So I always try to take really good notes. Offers, we are really big on letting the hiring manager send the offer. Where I work, because it's their person that's joining the team.
Mm-hmm.
So I really actually like that aspect where it comes from the actual manager.
Yeah.
And they love doing it.
It's so fun because it's like it's not your money, but you're like, you get to hear the excitement in their voice. And
yeah, I mean, you could change someone's life in that phone call. It's just like really cool and they love doing it. And I love that they love doing it. And previous to when I got there, they weren't able to do it. And so I think that was also a big win for them.
That's good. Mm-hmm. So working in HR, you probably have opinions about, you know, all the different sites out there as far as like LinkedIn and the premium, mm-hmm. where you can see probably it pays this much, and Glassdoor and salary.com.
Mm-hmm.
What's your mm-hmm. thoughts on that? And Do they impact your business at all?
Oh, they're constantly calling me. I really love LinkedIn. I love all of its features. I love the ability to share company news and find people. Obviously, I use the LinkedIn recruiter seat, which is different from like the normal seat. It's like $10,000 a year or something.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's real expensive, but it's so effective. Glassdoor is the one I really struggle with. I am a big believer that only disgruntled people go right to Glassdoor.
Mm-hmm.
No one's like, you know what? I really love my job for a year. I will go into Glassdoor and write a review. That's just not something that happens.
Yeah.
So it's usually disgruntled people. And so when I see companies, me personally, if I see companies that have a low score or low CEO approval rating, I don't think much of it. It could be 4 reviews that were just people that just got laid off in a reorg that are upset. So I don't take it too seriously, but it's a necessary evil to be on there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one I really struggle with.
Do you feel like the salary reports are accurate?
For the most part, I would say. Again, it's based on the area and the industry. Mm-hmm. So where we are right down the street from Marathon. And it's a completely different industry. So it's always really hard for my job specifically, because they normally will pay quite a bit more because it's a different industry.
Mm-hmm.
So when people, you know, try to say, but it's the same community and it's right down the street and everything, it's like, well, it's not really, because it's a different industry. They can pay more. It's just how it is.
Yeah.
So that's really hard. But I would say for the most part, they're pretty on par with those. Obviously, it's usually a big range, so it depends on a lot of things. But I would say so.
Yeah. Well, because where I work, we have salary transparency, so they're all reported to a database. Mm. And updated every pay.
Really?
Like with names.
Huh.
Yeah.
So kind of like that.
Yeah. Well, it's government. So.
Well, yeah.
So I agree. I think it's the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so interesting because, like, I'll have candidates that come in and they can look up anything they want. So they are pretty empowered and have at least an idea of what's feasible. And typically when we post positions, like right now, I've got, I'll have a position on my team opening up. So I'm kind of preparing myself for that kind of conversation as far as what will fit in fairly with the team, but then also making sure that it's specific
competitive
job and the person and, you know.
Yeah, that's hard. We don't have a set salary for any of our jobs. We're so open on experience and the level, which is awesome and really tough at the same time. So if I ask for like the salary, I might get a $20,000 range. They could say, you know, if you get someone with 3 years experience, great. But we want to be able to flex if we need to go up to like 10 years experience.
Mm-hmm.
So again, great. But at the same time, kind of hard.
Yeah. Well, because then if somebody comes back and say, hey, I want this much more.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have the fallback of that's out of range. It's like, well,
correct.
We have a huge range.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So for your job, I've seen that you do some traveling.
Mm-hmm.
When is the first time that you traveled after having your daughter?
That was a very quick and like sudden trip to, they told me Chicago, and I was so excited because I've never been.
Really?
And it was not Chicago. It was North Chicago, which is 1 hour away from Chicago. But that's apparently what they call themselves. So to this day, I'm not even really sure what town I was in. Because we flew in. We wanted to go meet on site at a certain company and kind of learn from like their recruiting department. And we went with our chief HR officer, my boss, who's a VP, and then my coworker. So it was a very quick trip, flew in the night before our meeting and then flew out after the meeting. So I was only gone a day.
That's not too bad.
And it was a really great first trip. I enjoyed it. I loved it. My boss asked me like, how are you going to do with this? And I was excited. I was thrilled to go back to work. I was that weird person that didn't at all have any like qualms about it.
Mm-hmm.
I woke up that day ready to seize the day, put on a super cute dress, drove to work. I felt like I was free to like be back in myself again.
That's not bad at all. That's not weird.
No, but no, it is. I will say though, I think a big part of that is I have a babysitter that comes to the house.
That helps.
Yes. So I didn't have to like leave her with strangers. So we are very lucky to have a babysitter come to the house that I trust with like my whole life. So she was still here in her house with her dog and her cat. And we had had some test runs before with our babysitter. So I knew she would be in good hands.
See, that is the thing is, like, I love, love, love our babysitters.
Uh-huh.
But I bring Anna to them. And that yeah. is, it's gotten a lot better that she's a little older now. But in the beginning, she would just cry.
Yeah.
A fair amount of the drive. And just, I'm not yeah. a patient person anyway. So when we get stuck uh-huh. in traffic, it was like, yeah. oh, my God, can we just.
Yep.
Can we
yeah, just I don't be done? Have that, thank God.
Yes. That is really nice.
Yeah, it is. We got very lucky. In typical fashion, we got randomly lucky. And our babysitter had never babysat before. But I had something on Facebook, you know, asking if there was anyone that would be willing to do it. A lot of the people around here didn't take babies under one.
Oh.
So I was, yeah, I know. So I was like, oh my God, like I never knew this was a thing. I just thought if you babysat, you could take an extra kid. I didn't think about it. So our babysitter just one day was like, I might be interested. I've never watched a kid. And I was like, well, come over. We'll just talk briefly. And so my husband and I talked with her. And I remember Matt asking, like, so have you ever babysat before? And she was like, no, not really. I babysat like a fifth grader before. And Matt's seeing like red flags. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, whatever. Because in my normal day, you hire for the person mm-hmm. and you teach them the skill. That's what you do. So in my mind, I thought, well, we've never babysat a newborn before. And here we are. They sent us home with one. We've never done it. We figured it out because we're smart.
Yeah.
So
that's what I was just
from
gonna
then
say.
On.
I was yeah, Bailey say was your recruiting skills uh-huh. were extra advantageous.
Yeah, they were, because I was like, you know what? She's super reputable. She was an awesome student. Everyone in the community that I talked to about her, like, loved her. And no one had a bad – she was from a good family. She's just a good person. And that's the kind of people that you hire and you teach them what you need to.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
So if anybody tries to steal her claws,
oh boy. Oh, boy. I've had some friends try it because they live in Columbus, and when they ask like what I pay our babysitter versus like what they're paying, they're like, oh my God, like I'm gonna steal her.
I know.
I'm like, well, I dare you.
And that's the thing too, we do in home, and we have friends that take, you know, in her home, not
yeah
home to me, and you know there's other children there and there's other women that are part of the team and everything. But when I hear about how much people are paying for a traditional daycare, which, uh-huh. you know, that may be the right choice for them, but dang.
I don't know how they afford it.
My student loans still need to be paid, so I can't pay that too.
Yeah. You can't either afford to have a kid if you're going to have to go that route, or you can't have a second kid. That's how I look at it.
Yeah. Well, and that's kind of the debate of like, should people get like these European level, like year off that is paid by who, I don't know, for maternity leave. And it's kind of one of those things where as a mom, and even before I became a mom, it was like, I see the logic in saying, well, obviously only women at this point, until science does something crazy, can have children. So
yeah,
that's just the way it works.
Yeah, that's I agree with that. I wish the United States would look at, you know, different options for mothers here and make them mandatory, because it's so important.
Yeah, it's like, but then I can also see, okay, if I'm a small business owner,
correct, yeah,
and if I have my person that works, for example, in sales, and she's working and she's getting sales for the business and making money, and then she's not there, and then there's no sales, it's like, I see that you have to figure that out. But
mm-hmm.
it's like, is the solution a kind of a how we all pay into short-term disability and have it cover
mm-hmm.
more things? Because like at the end of the day, it's women who can have babies, and That's just how it happens. If we all want the human race to continue,
mm-hmm.
like, that's how it works.
See, I hear that and I say, yes, she might need time off, but it is so much more expensive to hire and train a new employee. So mm-hmm. you might as well keep your current employee that's good and whatnot, happy and healthy, because you'll just spend so much money trying to get that new person in the door.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Like, I forget what the numbers are that I've heard, but I've heard kind of at least in like the five figures range of where it can get to as far as costing like $10,000 in either lost productivity and then kind of the rest of the staff having to do double duty and then trying to recruit. And especially if you are smaller and you have to hire a recruiter.
Uh-huh. Yep.
And isn't the way it works like when you hire like a recruiting firm, like don't they get like a cut for a time?
So if you use an external recruiter, they probably are pretty good at getting you in the door better than you would be yourself. So, and you don't pay for them. You don't have to pay for them. The company will then pay you. I think what's average is like 25% of your first year salary. So they're pricey. But you know, and there's some really good ones out there. And they do a really good job at getting you in the door that maybe you wouldn't get in yourself, but no, you wouldn't pay for anything, but the company will pay a lot.
Well, that's what I mean is like, if I have a job open and I hired a recruiter to find a person for me, then I have to pay them.
Yeah. Oh, a lot too. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not even worth it. You might as well just keep your current employee happy and maybe just have someone from like a temporary staffing firm try to keep up the accounts while she's gone.
Yeah. So do you work with your colleagues on kind of that retention plan too and kind of say like, now we got them in the door, but how do we keep them and keep them to stay?
So yeah, that's kind of our, like our boss, we have a lot of broad goals for this year and like the following years that kind of play into that. We always track like why people leave. So we have good data. It's just a matter of how do we get them to stay? So, I mean, the littlest things go such a long way with that. Like just like little parking lot parties that we might have. People love those. Or just doing events after work, like maybe a company-wide happy hour. So we're throwing around some ideas about that.
Mm-hmm.
I personally think the best way to get people to stay is to manage them how you want to be managed yourself and pay them fairly. It's that simple. It truly is that simple to me.
And that does seem to be like what people leave for as far as like
uh-huh.
either your boss
uh-huh.
not a good fit with you
uh-huh.
and you find someone who's going to give you more money and you got your carrot and then you go.
Correct. Yeah. I completely think it's just that simple. So many people get, you know, culture confused with job happiness. I personally don't care. They could offer me alcohol at lunch and I'd be like, I don't care. I would rather just be paid fairly and competitively. And I want a boss who is understanding
mm-hmm.
and helpful. That's it. That's all I want.
That's reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about what either you've seen in your position or some of the stuff that you've negotiated for yourself about work flexibility.
I'll start with salary. I think where I work, we need to do a lot better of a job at handling salary negotiation. A person that you might have roomed with freshman year mm-hmm. went through a interview, I believe last year, with a new retailer. And she said, you know, I really wanted to make, let's say $50,000 or $60,000, I think, but they've offered me $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, nope, absolutely not. You're not going to accept it. I said, go back and tell them, you know, that you want 68 or something or 58. And she's like, I'm scared. What if I lose the job? And she really needed it because her other job was being eliminated. And I said, they won't. They lowball you on purpose and they expect you to come back. So she went back with that and they said, you know what, the best we can do is 55 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the recruiter handled it so well. I was so impressed, and I still remember the story, but she said to Katie, she said, you know, I really appreciate how much you value yourself, and I'm really glad that you did that. That shows exactly what kind of person we're hiring, and I really like that. And I just thought that was the nicest thing and the best way to handle that potential, because so many people can get annoyed if they come back and they're like, no, I want this much. But it's, I think it's important. You have to negotiate that salary.
Well, and it impacts everything following, like your merit increase is on top of that. Whatever your company does for retirement is going to go on top of that.
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing is when you start in the beginning, like in your phone interview, if they ask what's your desired range, that's a tricky question. But if you are at 50,000 now and you want to be at 60, you tell them that you're not looking to make a move unless it's at least 60,000. Or 60 to 65,000. And then you have to stick that number through the process. Don't let them change you, or don't let them say, you know, our top range for this is 55. Say, I'm sorry, you know, I really just want to stick at 60. Because if they're going to hire you, they're going to make it work.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. I hired a person on my team last year, and this person was like, to be honest, like we didn't interview very many people because this person, based on their resume and the interview was awesome, I'm like, I want this person. Uh-huh. And I knew that he was interviewing for other positions, and mm-hmm. I was like, we got to act fast. And our recruiter was so quick and so helpful. And it was just interesting to recruit for this job because it was new and a just kind of different area than where we've been before. But he asked for a number that was lower than what I thought he was worth.
Oh.
And I'm like, dude, you
know, that's interesting.
I know. And I was like, no, we're going to pay him this other number that's more. And I was so surprised because our HR was like, okay. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Now, if he had come and asked for this much more, would you have said yes so easily? But I was just kind of like, we need to make sure we get this person. I want to make sure this person is paid what they should be paid.
Yep.
And kind of, and I've talked to him afterwards. I was like, why didn't you ask for more? Like, you're worth more than that. And he's just kind of like, I don't know. And so I feel like salary's so taboo, but maybe I'm just immune to it now just since my salary has been, you know, in a database for years. So I'm like, I don't know.
But it is. People don't talk about it, and it needs to be talked about, I think.
Yeah, like it's not dinner conversation, but it's like,
yeah, so you deserve to know where you stand. Yeah, absolutely. And that's really odd because he's a guy and they're usually way more confident in the interview process and they ask for more. So I'm really interested in that.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to tell you a little bit more about kind of the situation because it was interesting to me too, because I read so much about it's kind of sick how much I read about it, but like I'm a really big believer about asking for what you're worth and knowing what your worth is. And when I made the switch from my prior job to the organization I work now, I'll admit I was like ready to do something different and, you know, looking for a new challenge. And I was just like, how do I get myself motivated? Because I was feeling a little sad about where I was and just, you know, not having the best fit for me. And so I started reading these articles on LinkedIn from this woman named Liz Ryan. Have you read
her? Yeah, I follow her.
Yeah. And she had like some really great messages about kind of finding your voice and, you know, understanding your worth, but then also being really protective of your old salary and not telling people about it because it doesn't matter because the job is the different job.
Correct.
And some of the stuff, like you said, about being very firm and providing a range and, you know, sticking to that. And you're so right. When you do get through the recruiting process, you're like, man, I really want this person.
Yeah, you do, because you come off more confident. And you're right. It has their job they have now or used to have has nothing to do with this particular new job at a new company. So I hate asking that question, but I always have to ask on the phone interview just to make sure we're in the same ballpark, or else we're just going to waste everyone's time.
Right.
And there's a number of different ways that you could answer it. You could just say, you know, I don't feel comfortable answering that right now. That's fine. I get it. At some point you will have to, but.
Well, do you ask what is your current salary, or do you ask like what is your target?
Yeah, I ask like what sort of compensation package are you looking for? So anything from what salary are you hoping for this new position? Is there a bonus that you have in mind on top of that? Obviously, we have like a full benefits package, so that's always part of it. Do you have any relocation assistance that you need? I try to get the whole package from them then, so yeah. I know how we're going to move forward.
Well, that's a fair question to ask, though, where it's like, what are you looking for? Not like, tell me, your pull up your security statement and tell me everything you've made.
Right. Tell me all about what your 401k looks like, please.
I love it. So we talked a little bit about kind of our LinkedIn reading and stuff, but what kind of podcasts and books are you into right now?
Oh my God, I love podcasts.
Good.
I love podcasts so much. And I have a coworker who I swear to you every day, I'm like, hey, guess what I learned on my podcast? Because I listen to so many different ones.
There's so many good ones.
I know. So my favorite one is probably Criminal.
Okay.
First off, the lady has the most relaxing voice I've ever heard in my life. If I ever had another kid, I'd want her there to coach me through it.
Ooh, that sounds nice.
She's good. And she talks about crimes that aren't what you think they will be. So for instance, like the first episode, this guy's up for murder for his wife. Long story short and plot spoiler, an owl did it. So they go into like, yeah, it took this weird twist. They all take really weird twists. An owl had swooped down on his wife when she was outside in their yard and basically killed her. And I guess this is somewhat common.
What?
Yeah. So I've learned so much on that podcast. And then I also love a new one called This Is Love. It's by the same lady. And it's just about different love stories.
That's
highly, highly recommend. And then do you know who Hillary Kerr is?
No.
Okay. So she started Who, What, Where.
Okay.
Like the fashion line at Target, and they have some other companies. She just started a podcast called Second Life, and I think it's just for women. And it's basically like how they got started. So she did one with like Candace Olsen, who started Sprinkles Bakery.
Mm-hmm.
That was super interesting. And then she just did one with Jen Atkin that does like the hair for Kardashians.
Yep.
I love that stuff. Really interesting. She asks really good questions. And so it's just like an interview and just hearing their stories and whatnot. And I love it.
See, that's one of my favorite things about podcasts too, is that the way I've heard it described is that it's, lean back listening, mm-hmm. whereas other avenues are lean in, like you have to really be engaged with it.
Yeah.
So like drive time, and some people, I can't, but some people can work and listen to them at the same time.
No, I can't either.
No, I would stop writing the words.
Yeah, I have like a 40-minute commute, so they've become my new best friends.
Mm-hmm. There's this one I really like. I mean, I've listened to the Serial and all those sorts of things, and they're great.
Oh yeah, Serial.
But Stuff You Should Know.
Oh,
it's literally what's called Stuff You Should Know, and they have a lot of episodes. So it's enough that you're like, I'm not interested in that. But there's more that keep coming.
Yeah,
and they just kind of delve into the research behind, you know, a topic. Like for Black History Month, they did one on Harriet Tubman. They did one on the Underground Railroad. And I'm driving, and I'm sure my face was so dumb looking because I'm like, what? Oh, my God.
Yeah, so that's the stuff I would like. I love random facts or just, like, learning about. There's another one called Foodstuffs, and mm-hmm. you just learn, like, I learned one whole episode of how champagne was made or, like, discovered. And it was actually discovered by accident, and they were trying to make champagne not happen.
What?
So they hired, this is no joke, they hired Dom Perignon to make champagne stop happening. He couldn't, so he just named it for himself, and here we are.
That's amazing.
It's so crazy. It was an accident.
I would like to admit something on accident.
I know. And then sell it for $200 a bottle.
Yeah. He's like, look, you don't want this. This is trash. Bye.
Yeah. It was the craziest thing. I loved it.
That's funny.
And then books, I read a lot. So each year I make a goal for reading. Normally it's like 12 books, like a book a month. Mm-hmm. And then after Emma, I tried for 8 books, but I got 10. And this year, my goal is 8 books, and I'm already done with 5.
That's awesome.
I have to make a very conscious decision at like 9 p.m. when I go to bed. I'll lay in bed for about an hour, and I don't pick up my phone. So I can stay off social media and read. That's my goal.
That's hard.
It is. And this year, I'm trying to read books that I normally wouldn't. I really love... This sounds so terrible. I love, like, depressing stories. I really do.
Did you read, like, back when you'd have, like, the Scholastic Book Fairs, like, the Lurleen McDaniel books?
No, I didn't. But Book Fair Week was, like, the best.
I'd always read those ones. And the girl would, like, get cancer. Or, like, somebody would die. It was always like, of course, the guy saves her. And all the girls, we were like, let's read these.
Yeah, so like All the Light You Cannot See, that was so sad. Loved it. The Help, kind of sad. Loved it. Anything where like people just have really inspiring stories of like survival or like what all they've seen, but they've made it out. Like, I love those stories.
That sounds better than saying I like the sad ones.
Well, they are sad though. Like, I read, especially after Emma, I read this other book, and it was the beginning of, I think, World War II. And this mom couldn't feed like her child, and the little boy ended up dying. And I about put it down. I was like, I can't. Like, everything in me's changed. I can't enjoy these stories anymore. So it's changed a little bit, but I just really, I don't like happy go lucky stories where everything works out perfect, because that's not life.
Right.
So I'm not out here reading Nicholas Sparks. I like more depth and sadness.
And tragedy.
I like tragedy.
Another podcast you should check out. Like, I love the Harvard Business Review. Ooh. And the McKinsey ones, which part of me is like, am I just trying to be aspirational and fancy here? Because there's no way I could get into Harvard.
I haven't even heard of that one, so I'm going to definitely look that up.
Yeah, so... A lot of the Harvard ones reflect back on the publication, the Harvard Business Review, which is super expensive. So
yeah,
so it's a good way to kind of get the research behind all the things that they're talking about without having to pay for it.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. And they're normally like 20 to 40 minutes, so pretty easy to fit in on a commute. Mm-hmm. But they have this limited run one that they might be bringing back that's called Women at Work.
Oh.
And it's really good. So it's hosted by 3 of the editors of the publication. And so they kind of have some kind of host-to-host banter and discussion, but then various interviews that take place within it. And they focus on certain topics. And they've been really interesting because they're kind of focusing on, you know, what is it like to be a woman at work today? All the way to negotiations and having your voice heard at work. And it's been really helpful. And like most of my team that works for me are women. And So I've kind of been like sending them texts like, listen, you should listen to this. This is good, because I don't want to be polarizing to the guys we work with, but
right,
good stuff to remember as they grow in their careers and interact with, you know, different departments. Yeah. And making sure that good. They speak up and just encourage them to kind of grow that way. But kind of going back to the negotiation stuff we talked about earlier, the last one that they had some kind of reader questions and stuff that they had recorded, which was kind of cool. But they had a researcher on that had talked about negotiating and kind of like, what's your perception at work and what kind of stuff can you get away with? And in negotiating, they said that the person who makes the first offer usually gets more out of it. So for example, if your friend is saying, hey, I want 60, and she says, I want 60 first before the company says, hey, we'll pay you 50.
Yeah.
They usually get more if they make the first offer.
Yep.
But they're less satisfied.
Hmm.
And if you make the second offer, you typically get less, but usually more satisfied.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I think that
you know the reason.
Truth to it.
Do you know the reason, though?
No.
They said the woman or person who does the first offer is less satisfied because she's been more stressed about making the first offer. And so you sit there and you're like, oh, I'm going to say 60. Just like you said, she was consulting with you. Like, are you sure? you know,
yeah,
number. But if you're reacting, you kind of at least have a baseline. Okay, they at least thought it was worth 50. So, you know, what can I ask for?
I kind of wonder, though, if I would be that way. I think I might be opposite than what they think. I would feel proud of, like, sticking to my guns, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to give that a whirl.
Yeah, those are good ones. So you make time to read, which is amazing. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to do the same thing, too, as far as, like, get off the phone.
Yeah.
And put a tracking app on my phone to make sure.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah. I'm like, what's good? What is acceptable? You app, you need to tell me, like, what's bad. But I don't know. It's at least making me be more mindful. I'm not sure what's the right
here, yeah.
But it's making me think about it, which is a step in the right direction.
That's true.
What other stuff do you do for yourself?
I love baths.
Ooh.
Real big on baths. And Emma's been going to bed lately around 7:38.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's a dream. It's truly a dream. I feel like I've made it as a mom because of that. And I will say, one of the best things that I learned right after she was born was about this book called Baby Wise.
Mm-hmm.
It looks super outdated on the cover. And we were having a really hard time getting Emma on a schedule because we didn't know what we were doing. So I read that book. It's pretty easy read. You kind of just, I don't think I even finished it because you just get so far, you kind of get what they're saying.
Yeah.
It was a lifesaver in helping create a schedule and a routine for her. And so she started sleeping through the night at like 9 weeks, right when I went back to work. And she slept through the night consistently since then, unless she's sick or something.
What a good girl.
So like now, I know. Now she'll sleep from about 7:38 to about 7 a.m.
That's incredible.
It is. And I really, truly credit that book with it because it just tells you like baby psychology, basically, of like, here's why they're doing this and here's what you can do and make sure you do this and don't feed them when they're sleepy because they're too sleepy to finish. So then they're going to wake up and it's like, well, duh. But you don't know.
Mm-hmm. I need to read that again because I read it before she was born. And I was like, all right, hurry up and get this because it was like it crunched.
Yeah. And I read it a month after she was born and it just like a friend texted me and was like, hey, you know, I heard on Facebook you were having issues. Try this. It really helped us. I immediately downloaded it on my Kindle and I've been thankful ever since.
Yeah. She's doing a lot better now, but I probably waited too long to switch her to having formula.
Oh.
Probably because I was like, no, I have plenty. But it was like, maybe not.
She was hungry.
Yeah, but it was just kind of like an ego issue for me is being like, well, I want to feed her.
Yeah, I did that I nursed for like 5 months, the first 5 months, almost exclusively the first 4 months. And then we started putting formula in just because I was getting so busy at work, I didn't have time. Looking back, I should have made more time. I just didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And then also early on, the best thing my husband ever did to me, and to this day, like, I owe him. He did all the late night feedings with Emma, basically once my milk came in. So every 3 a.m., like clockwork, he would get up, feed her the bottle. So one, I could sleep almost 6 hours in a row, which was super great. And then also she learned how to take a bottle very early on. So early on, she was fine with a bottle or the breast, was really helpful. Yeah. And I don't think at the time we realized how good that was. Until we then were like, oh, shoot, Bailey's coming. Like, hopefully everything will be okay because, you know, she's not going to have a boob to breastfeed. So, that transition worked really smoothly, but I don't think we knew that we did that on purpose.
You're like, we're smart. We didn't even realize.
Yeah, looking back, I'm like, what a great idea we had.
As long as you share it with other soon-to-be parents.
Yeah, exactly. But I know some people want to, you know, be like you said, you want to be the one that feeds her and be exclusive feeder. I just would pump a bottle purely so I could sleep. And I think Matt also really liked that bonding time that he got to have with her.
Yeah.
So it worked out.
So clever. So what about here's this is the time for you to help me, right?
All right.
So I don't know about you. I always love seeing your clothes, and I think that you have like a really nice sense of style. But I think something happened after like my favorite clothing store kind of was like, this might be a little too young for me, you know, years mm-hmm. and years ago, right? Mm-hmm. But I've always been a person that's like, I shop at this store and this is the store I like, and I buy all the things from this store, and that's my style. I just pick the store and that's it. So like high school, college, all about the Abercrombie. And then mm-hmm. Now we're on to J. Crew, you know, outlet, not regular.
Yeah, that's expensive.
Yeah. And then like Banana Republic. And mm-hmm. then something happened. What, professional clothes? I loved the Limited, but that's mm-hmm. now a weird online thing I haven't explored.
Yeah.
And I've just had a time and a half, and maybe it's just because, you know, over the years haven't worked out the way I used to. Mm-hmm. Now it's like mom bod
mm-hmm.
and trying to be like, I know what to wear to work.
Mm-hmm.
Off time is like, I don't know, pants. Like, what do you wear? And so, especially going back to work now, I'm like, okay, I need to go back and get some different work clothes, but I'm not really trying to, you know, that certain style right now and just try to make things work. So I've been trying to figure out, is there a place you can go that has like nice people that will be like, hi, we're going to talk to you about your actual body, not your aspirational body, your actual body, and help you pick things that are going to look nice and also make you not look like a potato.
There's not a place like that, I don't think.
Well, the only responses I've gotten back are like, okay, you can do a styling thing at Nordstrom.
Yeah.
Which is free and you can block time to do it. But I'm not going to buy.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd love to. Don't get me wrong. But that's unreasonable.
I think I'm pretty boring with my style. I know what works. So, like, I got a pair of these really, I don't even know why I bought them, but really random pair of, like, maroon dress pants
mm-hmm.
from Old Navy, of all places. They fit perfect. And they are just a fun color. So I got them in like two other colors, and I am a big believer in kind of like the capsule wardrobe.
Do you
where like I'm actively trying to get to that. Ooh. I don't have it at all down to that, but if you think about it, like for me, I wear the same exact stuff like on a 2-week basis, and then I just wear it again a different way. So I'm already like doing it, but I have all these other options in my closet that don't fit right. I don't want to get rid of them though, but then they just like overwhelm me.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get at the point where I have, you know, a few pair of jeans, some work outfits that I can just mix and match. I'm pretty plain and simple anyways. I just always have been. I like to have cardigans in different colors so I can just mix and match those. So I'm trying to get to that point because I'm just not, I love the trendier stuff, but I wear it one time and I don't wear it again.
That's true.
So I'm actively penning capsule wardrobe ideas. Okay. And someday I will get there.
Well, and it's a smart thing too, because especially if you're trying to get ready for work or now you got
to so easy.
Get ready. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I think we all automatically kind of end up picking the same things because we're like, that mm-hmm. feels good or it looks nice. Yep. And it's just emotional to get rid of clothes that you're like,
it is.
I don't fit this, but I like it. Or wish this was cute on me, but it's not.
Yep. Or it, I have so many clothes that, although I think, I do weigh less than I did before I got pregnant with Emma, my whole body's different.
Right.
So, like, it's just like a whole new ballgame and, like, whatever.
Yeah. It's like,
so I just stick to what works.
And that's good to hear you found something nice at Old Navy, too, because I've seen there's a handful of, like, I guess it's called them, like, mom bloggers, but they're not, like,
yeah,
they're not, like, do a craft moms. They're, like, cute outfit moms.
I follow a few of them, and I've gotten a lot of ideas from those. An Old Navy maternity clothes online. They don't have much in the store, but online, they were a savior to me. They had such wonderful things. And they weren't so expensive.
I wish I had known that because I just went to the Target maternity section and just bought like all the stuff, which is fine.
Yeah.
But the way that I was pregnant was like, weird look. I say weird looking, but
well, you didn't show for a while.
No, I didn't show for a while, so I was able to like kind of make do with some things.
I showed overnight, and then like was so big by 6 months that people thought I was having twins or I was due soon, and then I just plateaued. Yeah,
you're like, that's it. I've just that's the size.
I'm like, no, I've got 3 months left, but thanks.
You're like, please don't move anymore, but baby.
Yeah.
She just scrunched in a little ball for you.
Yeah, she did.
All right. Well, we're getting close on time, but I want to ask you 4 questions.
Okay.
We talked about your job and kind of how you built this, you know, recruiting kind of department and platform,
yep.
And your vision, and you're kind of getting to the point of having a well-oiled machine, but what's your goal for this year for work?
I think my goal for this year, so I want to do something new, and I don't quite know that I know what that looks like yet. I don't know if it's a new position within where I work now or learning a new skill where I work. I've even thought about starting classes for my PHR. It's an extremely hard HR exam, so
mm-hmm.
I want to be careful not to take on too much while Emma's little, but I just want to do something new. I don't have something in mind. It could be learning, you know, how to do a talent assessment or something that will just help me take my career to that next level.
That's exciting, though. There's a lot of possibilities.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Now, tell me, out of anybody, can be anybody, celebrity, unattainable, attainable, whatever, who would you most like to have lunch with and why?
My girl, Ina Garten.
Ooh.
I love her. She would be a very calming presence to me. You know there would be good food. And her house looks really nice, so I'd hope that this lunch would be at her house because I want to go to the Hamptons too.
Mm-hmm.
But it would just be like the ultimate, like just tell me all about – I would like interview her at lunch because she is just so fascinating to me. And so calming. So if I'm going to have a lunch away, I want it to be calming with good food.
I love that. And she has such an interesting kind of career path.
She is. Yeah. She's like, you know what? I'm going to quit the White House. I just really want to start this bakery, even though I've never done anything with it before.
It's like, who
and
are you?
And she nailed it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And she doesn't even watch herself on TV.
No. She's my favorite.
It's like, she hopes it turned out well.
Yeah. Well,
this paycheck's here we go. Coming in, so.
Yes, so I pick her.
So is you, I know it's not attainable, but would you like Matt to come with you and go on a date with Ina and Jeffrey? Would that be fun?
Oh my God. I didn't think about that because I love Jeffrey.
He's so cute.
And Matt would talk economics with him because Matt's a nerd.
Oh my gosh.
I know that would be so fun for both of us.
Like the dream date. Like
it really is. It really is.
It'll be the next contest. Like, HGTV dream home plus also date with Ina and Jeffrey.
Dude Network should really think about doing that.
They really should. So what's your real date night that you like to do?
So we don't have like a go-to. However, we haven't, have we? I don't think we've even had like a proper date night since Emma's been born.
Oh my gosh.
Where we haven't taken Emma. I'm trying to think. I know we've done stuff. Like gone to Lowe's or whatever, and I do enjoy going to Lowe's. But this Friday we have a proper date night planned with 2 of our friends, and so I'm really excited because we're going to go to a nice restaurant in Findlay. It's one of my favorites, and then there's like a bourbon bar in Findlay that opened, and we're going there afterwards. So I'm excited.
That'll be so fun.
I know, it's like the first date night, but my dream date night and something I do want to do this year is one of those like cooking classes.
Ooh.
Yeah, I really want to do that.
Well, when you have to stay home, or when you get to stay home, rather, what's your fast dinner that you can get done so you can just play with Emma before she goes to bed?
Girl, I can get tacos done in 12 minutes.
What kind of crazy tacos are these?
Well, if you have your beef already thawed out in the fridge, you just cook up your beef, throw your taco shells, we like hard shells, throw them in the oven for a couple minutes. I can chop up that lettuce and tomato and avocado. I can have that all done in 12 minutes flat. I just did it last Friday.
You're a queen.
That's like my, and who doesn't love tacos?
Stupid people.
Right? So yeah, I even like timed myself on time because I knew I could do it pretty quick, but I was even surprised to know it was 12 minutes. But yeah.
You're like, take that, Rachel Ray. 30 minutes, my butt.
Yeah, I can do it in 15. You brown that meat and you chop those toppings and you're done.
Now, do you get the packet of the seasoning or do your own?
I've been doing my own and I found a really great recipe for it on like, I think I just Googled like taco seasoning. I think it went to allrecipes.com.
Mm-hmm.
It is so much better than the packet stuff. And you can just make it in bulk and use like a tablespoon here and there. So it lasts a while, but it's so much better.
I'm doing that this weekend.
Yes. Highly recommend.
Well, I've had an absolute blast talking with you, Haley. Thank you for joining.
Yes. Thank you.
It was fun. Have an awesome night.
You too. Bye.
Thank you for joining me on After Daycare Drop-Off. I hope you enjoyed getting to know Haley, learning all about the recruitment process, how to advocate for yourself for your salary, and what you're worth. Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram at After Daycare Drop-Off for inspiration, updates from the show, and more. Take a moment to subscribe to the podcast and share with your friends. Until next time.